Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today we're excited to welcome back Dr. Carmen Bolter for part two of our deep discussion of her breakthrough findings in ancient Egypt that may upset the apple cart of traditional archaeology. Now, Carmen's five-part breakthrough series, The Pyramid Code, changed the paradigm of how we look at ancient Egypt and its chronology. Her new documentary series, The New Atlantis, is due out later this year. Now, in part one, we trace the search for the Atlantean Hall of Records and the pharaoh Akhenaten's ties to esoteric wisdom. In part two, Carmen will reveal what really happened at Amarna, and the breakthrough findings that suggest Queen Nefertiti escaped Egypt before the corrupt Amun priesthood killed the pharaoh Akhenaten. Hold on to your Ankh and scepter. We're going deep into the Egyptian mysteries. Here we go. Dr. Carmen Bolter, The Atlantean Akhenaten Revelation.
I think that we have the propensity, or the culture going on out there now, to blow things up and get the ultimate weapon and find the enemy and throw mud at them and pat each other on the back for getting the enemy that we made up. The real social life, creativity, and the community that they had at Amarna, it was absolutely brilliant, beautiful, healthy, non-hierarchical. And Daniel, we have not had peace on the planet since.
You know, it's interesting to discover how incidents in our ancient past have an impact on our modern world if we can decipher and understand their true meaning. The story of the pharaoh Akhenaten and Queen Nefertiti has been heavily edited by Egyptologists who couldn't grasp its major cosmic mystery. The story of Atlantis and all the evidence that's there to support it is routinely dismissed. Yet somewhere in the collective mind are the keys to unlocking our awareness of these sacred and historical mysteries. So let's go talk with Dr. Carmen Bolter.
Dark Journalist will go there. The deepest issues, the hardest stories, the biggest secrets. The truth is never easy. With top guests, like former Assistant Housing Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz.
Catherine, who is really behind this media censorship?
Internet feeds go through satellites. Who controls the satellites? It's the Pentagon.
Legendary investigator Graham Hancock.
Graham, this cataclysm must have destroyed an advanced culture in our ancient past.
It truly was an extinction-level event. It was accompanied by massive animal extinctions. It was accompanied by huge and unexplained sea level rises, and then a sudden plunge of global temperatures.
Best-selling author Jim Mars.
Jim, don't these elite corporate owners need us around to buy their GMO food? Why would they want to depopulate?
Because they are eugenicists and they believe that they need to purify the human race. And if that sounds like the Nazis, that's exactly what it is.
Coast to Coast AM investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda, how are we going to scale that wall of UFO secrecy?
Humans themselves are beginning to dismiss all of the policies of denial and lies.
Dark Journalists will go there. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special spring discount available for just $39 for one full year. You'll not only receive access to the complete audio archives to stream or download at your convenience, you'll also get exclusive subscriber-only content and Dark Journalist event discounts. Sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on the latest shows. Dark Journalist, let's get the real story in 2016.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.
Well, everyone, we're going to go into some fascinating territory with Dr. Carmen Bolter in part two today. And before we get started, I wanted to mention that May is going to be an incredible month. So watch for new episodes that are really unique, including this one. I can't announce them just yet, but I can say we haven't had such a series of revelations in a short span of time. So make sure you're signed up for the Dark Journalist newsletter so you don't miss any of it. Carmen, it's wonderful to have you back on the show for part two. Now, when we left off, we were discussing how the story of Akhenaten and Nefertiti has been manipulated over time to have them appear as fanatics, and they're often portrayed as freaks in some way. Now, you believe, based on your decades of research, that the Amun priesthood had Akhenaten killed, But that Nefertiti, who disappeared from history immediately after Akhenaten's capital city of Amarna was ransacked, fled Egypt to another country, and there is some new information that you're finding now, which does corroborate your view on this. Can you tell us about it?
There's a recent find, and when I looked at the pictures, and they're not verified, I don't know yet, I haven't been to see, and it's not easy to get all the pieces together. But I was looking at this cache of gold, and as soon as I saw it, I thought, that's from Amarna. And as I was looking at it, I saw, sure enough, a statue of Akhenaten.
That is amazing.
And each of the gods and goddesses. And so, you know, they didn't give up the gods and goddesses. They had Ptah and Sekhmet and Isis and Hathor and, you know, it goes on, Amun. And they had a lot of figures and they did not give them up. They did not give them up. But pretty much anything you're going to read, they went to one god. Well, that sounds Catholic. Mm-hmm. Right? So where do these points kind of merge and get mixed up and what's true? Anyway, so the people who found this cache scraped away. So these are largely wooden statues with gold leaf. Scraped away, got a piece of the wood, and had it carbon 14 dated. You want to know how old the thing? And carbon 14 tends to make things look younger. You ready?
Okay.
15,000 years.
Whoa.
So that turns the whole thing on its head. That means that possibly this is supporting the third party hypothesis. But, you know, you get your grandma's jewels and the china and the silver.
True.
And it goes down and it was her grandma's. Mm-hmm. And there are treasures that get passed along. So this starts to sound like these treasures came already made to Egypt.
Interesting.
It's a thought.
Yeah. Now, where was the stash found?
Not at liberty to say.
Okay, well, I can appreciate that. And this is going to be exciting as you reveal more of this discovery over time. I guess my question would be, how confident are you at this point in this Nefertiti breakthrough?
It's brand new, you know, and perhaps you're not supposed to talk about it, but I think it's really significant in terms of giving us something that supports the whole thing about Atlantis that seems so hidden. And it's been hidden from us. And yet we don't give up. I mean, people want to know what was Atlantis. And there's a statistic here that Atlantis is the subject of more screenplays, stories, cartoons, movies, documentaries than any other subject.
That's really something.
But usually it's relegated to the realm of myth. Right. And it doesn't really exist, but we can, you know, so then you can put Transformers there and, you know, people, Titans blowing things up, and you can do anything you want with it because we can't verify it.
Well, that's definitely true. And we seem to have this deep memory of a lost chapter back there. And, you know, it came up through Plato and in more modern times through Casey. And the memory seems to be of this advanced technological culture that existed in our ancient past and would rival or surpass our own culture.
Absolutely. And what? Is it threatening to think that we were more advanced? It's fascinating that they could make us think at 6,000 years old. And then there's something like Michael Cremo, who's used potassium argon dating and is coming up with skeletons that were a million years old.
Right.
Now, one of the things that our education system has done is that archaeology doesn't speak to anthropology and cultural anthropology doesn't speak to social anthropology, and everything's divided and compartmentalized. And so that's patriarchal ways of being and thinking. Divide, 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 conquer, hide, make things not transparent. But in these other cultures, it was all about joining together, cross-disciplinary, interactive, transparent, and all for one and one for all. I said it before, if it isn't good for everybody, it's not good at all. Well, we're not living that way now. And so it's threatening, perhaps, to whoever's putting the system together that wants to keep us in the dark. So these sorts of things become unpopular.
Oh, absolutely. And so much of it is a propaganda line really put out there to control your thinking and your curiosity. Now, one of the things you mentioned there was about consciousness. And I guess Atlantis would really be all about consciousness. And maybe that's the real guarded secret here, because their consciousness level was so different. Now, there was a study that you've mentioned that recently demonstrated that the Sphinx was actually 800,000 years old. This is a new study with some major researchers on board. What do you think of their findings?
You know, I was in Mexico at a spa when I got the article, and I had this, my physical reaction was just rushed with energy, and the thing in my head came, I knew it. And then I started to unpack it and look at how they did research and whatnot. But in terms of climatology, they haven't finished doing the research. It was presented at the geophysical, and I forget now the details of the conference. It's a real study that's looking at different disciplines, and further research has to be done. But it was presented, by professionals at an international conference. So we need to keep looking. But like I said, we keep inching back. But it stands to reason, because none of these different figures in the pyramids look like anything. They don't represent the temples along the Nile. That it could be that we've got the dating wrong. It could be.
Yes, absolutely. And something to consider on the dating of the Sphinx and the Great Pyramid is the case you reference that this group from Atlantis, who had helped to set up the Great Pyramid in Giza, were actually doing some archaeology themselves back at 10,500 BC, which does suggest that this plateau had already been an ancient site when the Atlanteans and Egyptians decided it was the perfect power spot. So that's not something that's brought up very often, but it's there in his readings that the special group from Atlantis were actually doing archaeological research.
Well, in the pyramid code, I make a point of the platform around the second pyramid being much larger than the pyramid itself, that may lend itself to the idea that there was something else there. Now, from the Band of Peace, in the first episode of the pyramid code, we're looking at the pyramids of Abu Roush, Giza, heading south, Abusir, Saqqara, Dahshur. And each of these, I've done a lot of work with Starry Night Pro and aligning how that grid fit together on the extragalactic grid. And if you head along the extragalactic meridian, you hit the galactic center, and you come back around to Sirius. So it's this continuous loop. So, and you see that in Peru and in Bolivia and all these different places where you get these star alignments. And so archaeoastronomy points to the fact that these particular planetary systems were of the utmost importance in many different cultures.
Yes.
Right? And so there's something to it, and it's a sky-ground correlation. I mean, if you look at Google Earth at the pyramid fields, it looks like they're just scattered, but actually if you line them up with true scientific astronomical stuff, it lines up. So yes, there's something to that. The dating may evade us, but like I said, like if a house is built and it's cut off at the foundation and something new's put over the top, there's a story. There's more than one date. There's something else that happened. And I think that we, get stuck inside one date, one time, one story, right?
Right. Now, when you look at the Great Pyramid, and you've spent so much quality time there researching it, there's been a lot of research around the idea of it as a machine. Like Christopher Dunn's work and Joseph Farrell, who's a frequent guest here on the show, he calls it the Giza Death Star. And the suggestion is that it was a gigantic defensive weapon in ancient times. Now, how do you see it? Do you think these theories about the idea of the Great Pyramid as a gigantic power station are viable?
Yeah. Okay. So I know Christopher Dunn, and I've spoken with him at conferences, and I think that coming from it as an engineer, he wasn't trying to prove anything psychic or psychological or spiritual, engineering. And I think he's given us a real gift by, taking images and putting them into AutoCAD and looking at the geometry and all of that. I think it's incredibly viable. I think he's been really brave to put those theories forward. Having said that, I think that everything in Egypt is multidimensional, multi-level, multi-purpose, right? And that it would not only have been that, okay? So it's not just a machine. It also perhaps was a chamber that they practiced, the high-level initiates practiced out-of-body experiences. There's lots to point to that sort of thing in ancient texts. When I hear Giza Death Star, sorry, I shudder a bit. I think that we have the propensity, or the culture going on out there now, to blow things up and get the ultimate weapon and find the enemy and throw mud at them and pat each other on the back for getting the enemy that we made up. So it doesn't resonate with me well. So I walk big circles around that and come back, no stone unturned. I'll listen to all the material. But I'm always cautious. Are we looking through the lenses of our culture?
Mm-hmm.
And projecting onto them? Because my interest is seeing, if we can, see it in a value system, right? So, like I said before, bringing things together. And how would they have lived differently if they were coming from a different value system? So, and that's what I said too. It's like right now what we're in is a crisis of values. If truth is an option, we're in crisis.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. Okay.
And so I don't think that the ancients were all about blowing people up. And there's something that's easy to, I was going to say believe, or it's easy to think, well, it's just the same old, you know, history,
right.
History. There's always been war. And I say history is when the soldiers came. That matriarchal cultures didn't operate that way. And I've said many times that we're going to come to see the last 5,000 years as the patriarchal hiccup.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things pointing to that, that it's a failed experiment. If you lop off the sacred feminine, things don't go so well after time.
Yes, interesting. That's an excellent point, actually. Now, with your research on ancient Egypt, and you really know that culture on a seriously deep level, do you think their understanding of off-world influences and civilizations was better and not as limited as our modern society? You mentioned before about their concept of star ancestors and things of this nature. How did they view it?
Well, again, we're speculating. And if you look at what they left, like the first hypostyle hall in the ceiling of the Temple of Dendera, Temple to Hathor, looked like looking into a cup of black coffee before. And the artifacts on the ceiling, or the frescoes, are actually 40 feet up. And so you almost couldn't make them out. So it took them years to clean it. And actually, they would burn fires in there and use them as barns for animals. And then when the dung was in the straw, they'd burn it. And then it left all this soot on the ceiling. And you're not allowed to add color in Egypt, but you are allowed to remove mold and soot and that sort of thing. So they have done a spectacular job of cleaning this ceiling. And this is definitely the subject matter of one of the episodes of the New Atlantis. And so it seems that there was an up-down connection. And you know, having been a conscious channel, and I mean, these are, you're not supposed to say that, you know, Tarot, no. But I mean, I think these are things like from the Inquisition that were, you know, no, you haven't had a past life. And I think people get a little huffy about all that stuff. And there's plenty of research. You can do research on things you can't see, you know, auric fields and all that stuff. And so, you know, I work for 17 years as a psychologist and, you know, saw lots of studies of little children who knew things from before. Anyway, so to connect with source, with a higher something, purely not ghosts and astral greeblies that are at the low level, was normal to them. And I think that if you look at the ceiling, you're going, yep, they were communicating with something. And you've got star beings with stars, you know, in their body like Nui. And my book, Angels and Archetypes, is really addressing those kinds of things, because archetypal energy exists whether you know it or not. And there's often, you'll see Nui, like if you get into a sarcophagus, what's above on the lid is Nui's outstretched hands with stars all over.
Right.
So basically what that's saying is if you're departing this earthly incarnation, you're going to the stars. That's what they thought, it seems. That's what they seem to be indicating at face value.
Yes, it is fascinating how they had a very natural understanding of being connected to the cosmos. Now, you've mentioned that you feel you've had past lives in Egypt, and you've been connected to this Akhenaten-Nefertiti period. Do you feel any resonance there that you want to talk about in terms of memories?
Yeah. And I think I was going to say been a slave to it my whole life, like to understand what really happened there. And I've been to Amarna twice and it's flattened. I mean, you know, it looks like, and there's only one thing there. So I've had some pretty interesting experiences there. And I actually went there with Hakim and four other people the first time. And I was just full of visions and this happened over here and this happened over here and feelings and the smell of the flowers and the horse chariots and, you know, like, and you know, some people can just put all that down and say, you know, be quite cruel about saying you're making it up. But I've had a lot of visions and memories, and I think that's because things didn't end so well there, and we come back with this cellular memory. And so I'm comfortable with that. I've been living with it my whole life. I think they were doing that too, and I feel particularly identified with that sort of thing. And I think there's still a story to be told. And there's still a lot of resistance. I haven't run into a lot of resistance. Mostly people have been really respectful of my work. But in the past couple of days, all of a sudden, I'm under huge attack.
Huh.
Yeah. And being accused of lots of stuff. And so that's terribly unpleasant. And anyway, but that's, I guess, I mean, what happens? I suppose I should be grateful that it hasn't happened till now. But, you know.
Well, and here you are coming out with this new documentary.
Yeah. And the success of the Pyramid Code, you know, it's been worldwide. It's been translated into several languages, aired on TV, national TV in 38 countries. You know, it's really, really done well.
Yes, it's an incredible study and investigation. And, you know, a question I have for you is, with all of your super efforts to bring the truth out about ancient Egypt, since you started and right up to the present day, even looking at the work of other researchers who appear on the Pyramid Code, like Robert Bival and Graham Hancock, who we had on the show discussing his new research on Göbekli Tepe and this comet that hit the Earth causing massive devastation in 11,000 BC. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of their work originally came out in the 90s. And before that, you know, in the 70s, there were studies about pyramid power. And there has been this kind of powerful thread of revelations over time. But how do you think we're doing here in 2016? Should we be further along? You know, are we doing well or not so well?
That's an interesting question. Okay, and I think it's double-layered. I think, in truth, the people who are finding these sites who are doing really solid research are doing quite well. And I think that in terms of cover up and accusations and, you know, people pointing fingers and saying that's baloney, that's equally as strong. But it doesn't mean that the accusations and the push things back into the old paradigm is factual. So actually from where I sit and how, if something's discovered, people let me know right away. And, you know, it's fascinating.
That's great.
We've got footage from 10 countries for the New Atlantis. And I'm invited to go to these places and see for myself. And it's credible. It's credible research. Now, it's not accepted by mainstream, but I think that's part of the game we're in right now. So, for example, for Dr. Sam at the Bosnian Pyramids, he was given carte blanche to take care of this excavation site. He's been working for 9 years. He's had some 500 volunteers a year there. They took a year off last year because they were doing different scans and whatnot. It's the most successful active archaeological site on the planet for those reasons. But when he was given the keys to the kingdom, he was told that mainstream media would never acknowledge the authenticity of it. And he went, okay, if that's the deal, I'm in. So that's what we've got, is an us them. And so, you know, on one side, we're making huge discoveries and there's an openness and more people interested. And on the other side, we've got the no, don't go there.
Wow. It is a real tug of war. And one thing, I guess, that's just swimming in the headlines right now is this room that's been found behind King Tut's tomb and has yet to be opened. Now, they've been floating this idea around that it might be Nefertiti's mummy in there. even though, as you say, they claim to already find her. And I know you believe that she fled, so she wouldn't be there anyway. What do you think of this new discovery?
Well, I got into trouble by giving my opinion on that, but it is my opinion. I'm not saying it's true.
Oh, please tell us.
Okay, there's a lot wrong with it. I mentioned earlier that they concluded that they found Nefertiti already through the Joanne Fletcher two royal
right, exactly.
women, one with the broken arm and the royal beads. So I say that whoever those mummies belong to were in the royal high court at Amarna. Okay, that means they knew Nefertiti. That doesn't mean they are Nefertiti.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm comfortable with that. And then, if the Amun priesthood was coming back, okay, Tutankhamun was Tutankhaten. And there was, if you look at Maurice Cotterell's work, he talks about solar flares that changed fertility levels. And there were times when males had a harder time surviving. And I sincerely believe this was the case in Amarna, where Nefertiti Akhenaten had six daughters, and there were almost no boy children. So King Tut ruled from the age of 9 to 18. And it's my conviction that he was raised at the North Palace with the women. And he was taught to understand the Aten and the Amun because there was a big conflict. So he goes to rule. He's taken in by the Amun priesthood. And then somebody figured out that he was really of the Aten and he had a foot on both shores. So they killed him. Now, there's all kinds of stuff to say. He had a club foot and a hair lip and he was Akhenaten's son. And they messed around with the DNA research for 12 years because
right.
they have an agenda. Mm-hmm. They knocked him off. They needed to get him buried in a hurry. And they just took a bunch of furniture from Amarna and stuck it in a warehouse. Now, Ramsay's tomb is 79 rooms, not two rooms. I've been in that chamber, in his tomb. Okay. So if there's a couple of empty spaces behind and they're using scanning technology, well, if it's the proper kind of scanning technology, you could see if it's bone or a mummy or if there's something in there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're planning on doing a conference in May of bringing experts to decide if Nefertiti could be there. Well, if you want to know if she's there, go look. A. B. That tomb was hermetically sealed. And so that would mean that Nefertiti would have had to die on the same day to get in there at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And so we have no information. But they already concluded, if you go online and look, Nefertiti's, you know, you'll find that they decided she was found already. Well, what do you need to look for her again? Okay? So there's a lot wrong with it. And I don't think that scanning technology is strong enough or accurate enough, that particular style, or otherwise they'd be able to look. But it makes no sense to me. They've never found two kings, queens, buried in the same chamber. They're trying to say that Nefertiti was Tut's mother. I don't think that's the case. He was there in the royal court. Somebody, he was born to somebody, but I don't think it's Nefertiti and Akhenaten. So what is it? An agenda? I don't know. But I'm telling you, by being a naysayer on this, I've gotten a lot of heat.
Wow. Somehow it's not surprising. I think your knowledge of ancient Egypt makes you a target when they get these stories going. So it's going to be interesting to see how they spin this.
They're spinning it. I'm saying no, I don't think so.
Well, you're challenging the standard story.
I'm coming at it from 50 years of research, you know, and I don't have to be right. But we'll check with you in a couple of years and see, you know, what they find. Well, maybe we'll talk sooner, but you know what I'm saying. But I'm highly opinionated about this time frame because I think it was so important. They brought back the spirituality in the 18th dynasty. It started with Hatshepsut, right? And this was a very, very important period. But when you think about the real social life, creativity, and the community that they had at Amarna, it was absolutely brilliant, beautiful, healthy, non-hierarchical. And Daniel, we have not had peace on the planet since.
True.
That's why it's important to me.
Huh. Well, it is an excellent point, and maybe we're looking at the reason for keeping it in the dark. Now, you do point out that in the official stories and in the various portrayals of the Akhenaten family, they're shown as flawed in various ways. You know, there's always some strange thing they want to put across, like, oh, Akhenaten had a bizarre disease that gave him an elongated head and strange features. Of course, that period saw them introducing new ways to present the pharaoh and his family in a more realistic fashion, in a more true way. And the look of that period is beautiful in its imagery, including the Aten imagery. And we can see that they were really fascinating people.
But it's like a smear campaign on them. I think they were absolutely beautiful. Funny-shaped hat covers funny-shaped head. Perhaps they were star beings from off planet. And we use the medical model. King Tut had a club foot and a hair lip, and he died of malaria. Well,
you know, that reminds me that I wanted to ask you if any of the newer DNA testing has helped us to identify who the royal family members really were.
And they're looking at the Y chromosome and not the X chromosome. So mitochondrial DNA is what will give the lineage.
Uh-huh.
Well, if you don't know anything about research and anthropology and archaeology, you won't know that's a flaw. The other thing is, if you go back into National Geographic archives, they say they found the mummy of Akhenaten, and they're showing bones in the fetal position in a box. And they say mummy. Well, that's also how they do it. Like, even during the Egyptian Revolution, people would call me, they were calling me, so I turned the volume off and I've got CNN on. And you see people walking along, and it's right in front of the radio and television building on the Nile, the scene, and they've got their kids on their shoulder. And what you see is la-di-da, everything's fine. And you turn the volume on, they go, danger, danger, they're fighting, it's horrible. And you're not going to bring your one-year-old, you know, to a fight.
Right.
Or to where they're bombing. And so this is the way that they just keep repeating and repeating and repeating. And I'm fascinated that it works, but it is working.
Yeah, it's a mystery.
Okay, so I'm looking for a place that was more reasonable and healthy for people and fair and equitable and creative, you know, and that's part of my interest. But I also think that, you know, people deserve to know what could have been. Instead of it's all, you know, and yeah, there's lots to point to. We've always had war, and it's, you know, there's always been kings, and the king gets everything and the people don't.
Yes, it's a familiar pattern.
What do I say? I was going to say that nothing much has changed since Les Miserables, except we have more shoes.
Now, that's really true. So here's a question I feel you're uniquely qualified to answer. Akhenaten. A supernatural being?
If I had to say yes or no, without anybody attacking me, I'd say yes. And Hatshepsut as well.
Yes.
There's a whole story at the Temple of Queen Hatshepsut to the left side of the ramp that goes up to the Holy of Holies that speaks of her being half divine. And so it's her conviction that her father was taken over by a divine being when he impregnated her mother, which made her half divine. And that fresco is just all chopped up with, you know, chisels from the...
That is so intriguing. Yeah. And you do show in the Pyramid Code documentary that there's this intense set of hieroglyphics on a kind of stone plate that accidentally became visible at a temple in Abydos.
Abydos?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And they were showing just the most amazing, most modern-looking technology that resembled helicopters, a tank, an airplane, just astonishing. And there was a big move to cover that up immediately, just as soon as it came out. But that was really quite a revelation, I'd say.
Well, and it was covered up with a piece of stone for who knows how long. And then all of a sudden, one day, the stone came tumbling down and people went, what's that? Oh, it's a combination of hieroglyphic. You've seen that before. You know, so there's stories that are being told.
This thing is remarkable. It looks like Desert Storm, actually. Just completely advanced technology. Like, this is the Atlantean influence. And it looks like it's from 2016, actually. It's completely out of place.
Well, how do you explain any of it? How do you explain that? I mean, we've got to, you know, do our best to attempt to explain what was going on. But as long as we want the Egyptians to be misguided and naive and all of that, it's pretty difficult to figure it out.
One quick thing here on Queen Hatshepsut. She was the only female pharaoh.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty unusual. And she's depicted with the pharaonic beard to signify her position.
Definitely. Yep, there's a story there too. And I think that the beginning you know, this whole 18th dynasty was step by step with the percolating back up of the sacred feminine and the opposition of the masculine coming to say, no, because it was, it's patriarchy. And one of the things most people don't realize is that from the beginning of the dynastic period of Egypt, it was patriarchal. But there were no boys to take the place, and she ended up with that, and she posed somehow as being masculine. She's a special figure, for sure.
Wow.
Beautiful.
Yeah, she sounds amazing. And I suppose that with all of your research and all of your connections, psychically and otherwise, to Amarna, how do you feel about Akhenaten? How would you describe him?
I thought, you know, from everything that I thought he was just, you know, dignified and wise and magical and calm and right about leaving the Amun priesthood behind, that were corrupt, charging for people's salvation.
Yeah.
Oh, and we're modeling ourselves on that. We still say amen in church.
Right, right, exactly.
I mean, we're still worshiping them in some strange way.
That's a really good point. I've always thought, actually, that one of the most extraordinary things that Akhenaten did was move the capital of Egypt to Amarna. That's so major. That's like moving Washington, D.C. to Arizona or something. It's an incredible action to take.
It is. And what are the reasons? And what does it mean? So I don't know that these figures are ever that far away from us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're somehow still coloring our world. And something about, I call it Wi-Fi, and chemicals in food, and chemtrails, and
absolutely,
GMO, and systemic distress, and people's, you know, finances, not getting a job, you know, compounded interest on students. People are on their knees.
That's so true.
How are you supposed to try to figure any of this stuff out when you got road rage and, you know, if you don't believe what I saw on TV, then you're wrong?
Oh, there's no question. It's not an ideal environment for discovering the truth. And that's a major obstacle with all the distractions around. But there is a kind of feeling of a turning point, I'd say, an opportunity that's opening up. And we just might have the combination of tools available to us now to reach a new level of awareness. And I think the Atlantean-Egyptian past is such a major part of that realization. That's why I recommend your work to everyone that wants to know the truth about our ancient past and Egypt and Atlantis. And, you know, it's been a great pleasure to have you on the show for two special episodes. Just extraordinary. I know your new documentary series, The New Atlantis, will be out later this year, and we'll be watching for sure. So thanks so much, Carmen. It's really great to meet you.
Thank you, Daniel. Nice to meet you, too.
Thank you for joining me for this fascinating Part 2 episode with Dr. Carmen Bolter on the Atlantis Akhenaten revelation. You can find more special reports, deep interviews, and documentaries at www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe here to our YouTube channel for the latest videos. See you soon.
Dark Journalist will go there. The deepest issues, the hardest stories, the biggest secrets. The truth is never easy. With top guests, like former Assistant Housing Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz.
Catherine, who is really behind this media censorship?
Internet feeds go through satellites. Who controls the satellites? It's the Pentagon.
Legendary investigator Graham Hancock.
Graham, this cataclysm must have destroyed an advanced culture in our ancient past.
It truly was an extinction-level event. It was accompanied by massive animal extinctions. It was accompanied by huge and unexplained sea level rises, and then a sudden plunge of global temperatures.
Best-selling author Jim Mars.
Jim, don't these elite corporate owners need us around to buy their GMO food? Why would they want to depopulate?
Because they are eugenicists and they believe that they need to purify the human race. And if that sounds like the Nazis, that's exactly what it is.
Coast to Coast AM investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda, how are we going to scale that wall of UFO secrecy?
Humans themselves are bypassing, are beginning to dismiss all of the policies of denial and lies.
Dark journalists will go there. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special spring discount available for just $39 for one full year. You'll not only receive access to the complete audio archives to stream or download at your convenience, you'll also get exclusive subscriber-only content and Dark Journalist event discounts. Sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on the latest shows. Dark Journalist, let's get the real story in 2016.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.